Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you guys about betonline.ag. We are down to the final 8 teams in the basketball playoffs. Now at BetOnline Sportsbook, Denver and Boston, still heavy favorites to meet in the finals. However, I've got a sneaky suspicion about taking a flyer on Oklahoma City, the basketball darlings of New York, even a flyer on Indiana to possibly upset the apple cart and maybe, just maybe, go on a run to a Western or Eastern Conference championship. It's long odds. Take a flyer on all three. Maybe one of them cashes and you can make your money back. You can also pick up a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit using our promo code BLEAV, B-L-E-A-V, when you use the link in the description to this episode. Bet online, where the game starts. It's the most wonderful day of the year. There'll be ping pong balls falling, the lottery's calling to fill us with cheer. It's the most wonderful day of the year. It's the happiest day of them all. Spurs and Pistons and Blazers, Jazz, Wizards and Pacers hope to hear names called. It's the happiest day of the year. Teams have lied about tanking, except Houston's drunk ravings. Fertitta says pray for Wemby. Mavericks tanking with Luka, they're smoking that hookah. They need a pick in the top 10. It's the most wonderful day of the year. If the numbers are matching, your team will be drafting a star for 7 years. On the most wonderful day of the year.
Go Rockets.
Hey, absolutely.
Thanks so much.
Pray for Victor.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, or good night, however and whenever it is you may be listening. Thank you for stopping into another fantabulous episode of the Take It Easy podcast, live on the Bleav Podcast Network. Except it isn't live because it is just a podcast, and it is not just another podcast. No, ladies and gentlemen, it is the happiest day of the year, the most wonderful, fantastic podcast that I look forward to for 360 days until we get the opportunity to once again sit here and be the nerdiest nerds in all of the nerdiest nerd land and talk about the draft. Lottery. We have a reputation here on the Take It Easy podcast of being, for the last half decade, your number one go-to source of any podcast in America. No podcast in America talking sports, talking basketball, has you more plugged in to the NBA draft lottery than this fine podcast. A reputation we have staked a claim on for years. We care so much about the NBA draft lottery that today's not even the day of the NBA draft lottery. Tomorrow's not even the day of the NBA draft lottery. No. The NBA draft lottery will not be going on until Sunday evening, May 12th, which means we're recording a podcast 4 days in advance to prep you for the NBA draft lottery. We are the only podcast in the world talking NBA draft lottery at the time of this podcast release on Thursday, May 9th. Is that because we don't have another podcast until Monday when the draft lottery will be complete? Yes, and we have a reputation to uphold. So, yes, the Denver Nuggets might be down 0-2 going back to Minnesota in a shocking result that I simply do not know what to do with because it goes against all conventional analysis we've done all season on the Nuggets and Timberwolves, apart from just saying Jamal Murray is injured, and Jamal Murray is injured is the reason why the Denver Nuggets have completely fallen apart in the playoffs. Forget that series. Forget the Cleveland Cavaliers doing their darndest to beat a Boston Celtic team that before we said they could beat Cleveland without having Kristaps Porzingis. Now they could win the entire NBA Finals without Kristaps Porzingis because apparently Kristaps Porzingis was their fifth best player. Derek White is all of a sudden the third best player on the Boston Celtics, better than Drew Holiday, better than Kristaps Porzingis. Who could have possibly foreseen that happening? Forget about the Boston Celtics. Forget about the Oklahoma City Thunder's Game 1 beatdown of the Dallas Mavericks. Just like we foretold back in March, the Oklahoma City Thunder will go on to the Western Conference Finals. And hell, now that they're playing the Timberwolves, possibly, the Thunder will win the entire Western Conference in their first year with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Chet Holmgren, and Jalen Williams all playing together. Totally gonna happen now that Denver looks to be out of the picture, but forget about the Thunder. Forget about the Nuggets and Timberwolves and Boston Celtics. Today is the NBA Draft Lottery podcast of all podcasts. All year long, we get ready and excited for this NBA draft lottery. All the scenarios, possibilities, which teams are going to be losing their chances, which teams are going to be keeping their draft picks, which teams have a dead 50-50 shot to keep their pick or lose their pick. It's such an interesting conundrum for two teams in particular that we will get to in a little bit. So many interesting scenarios, so many teams, so many draft pick trades. This year, there's not even a great prospect. Like last year when we did the NBA Draft Lottery show, it was such an important season that we recreated our Most Wonderful Time of the Year song, which you heard off at the top of the podcast, mentioning Victor Wembanyama, the guy everyone's been tanking for all season. We made that whole song to get excited about the draft lottery. And this year, there's no reason to get excited about the draft lottery in such a way, because I simply do not know who is the top pick in the WNBA or in the NBA draft. I'm going to a mock draft board right now that has some guy named Zachary, but it's spelled Z-A-C-C-H-A-R-I-E. I'm going to assume that's Zachary, because that's phonetically what it looks like. Some guy named Zachary, who is Z-A-C-C-H-A-R-I-E, as the number one pick in the draft. So, God, if I know what that means. The top three picks in the draft are all international players. Doesn't necessarily mean they aren't going to be great NBA players. And I'm sure Zachary, spelled Z-A-C-C-H-A-R-I-E, is going to be a fantastic NBA player. I just don't know who he is, and secondarily, NBA people are saying, and I quote, "This is the draft that will get people fired." This was not the draft you want to win the draft lottery for. They foresee no surefire top picks. That doesn't mean there will not be a surefire top pick somewhere in the draft. I mean, you look at the baby generation that's coming up in the NBA, a lot of them you could kind of foresee their rise early on in their careers. Ja Morant, number two overall pick. Zion Williamson, number one overall pick in that same draft. Anthony Edwards, number one overall pick. Luka Doncic, number three overall pick, who should have been number one or number two, depending on how you feel about Phoenix taking Ayton, or at the very least, definitely should have been taken by the Kings over Marvin Bagley. So you got Luka Doncic in there, number three overall pick. Then you have your Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, middle of the first round. You have your Devin Booker, middle of the first round. If we go to the current stars, Giannis, middle of the first round. You know, there are chances that players that are not foreseen as stars do ultimately become stars. But the NBA is telling you that this year's draft is the draft that will get some people fired because they spent all year tanking for a top pick that will ultimately not produce a player better than the fifth or sixth best player in a lot of drafts. And granted, the fifth or sixth best player in a lot of drafts might be a one-time NBA All-Star like Darius Garland. I mean, Darius Garland in his draft class was the number 5 overall pick, and lo and behold, he's made one NBA All-Star team. So it's not to say there won't be talented players in these draft classes, especially players going to teams that are devoid of talent. It's just to say that the NBA is telling you this class ain't it. This ain't worth the tank job. But you know what's funny is that last year, the draft class that had Wemby and Scoot and Brandon Miller and the other people who will eventually make their names in the NBA but are not as high profile as those three. But those three players were at the top of the draft, and they were like, it's a three-person class. You want to get one of those three people. And Washington said, that's okay, we'll try and compete this year. And now we get to this year where the prize at the end of the lottery is Zachary. And Washington said, you know what? Give us Zachary. We are going to tank job all the way to the bottom of the lottery for a chance to land Zachary. And this brings us to the lottery odds, because the NBA is in a constant push and pull to try and even out the NBA draft lottery odds, in a constant push and pull to decide how best to adjust tanking, accommodate for tanking. If tanking seems like less of a problem, they loosen up the lottery odds. If it seems like more teams are aggressively tanking, they give more even playing field on the lottery odds. It's a constant push and pull the NBA is going through to try and perfect these lottery odds that ultimately are an incredibly imperfect science. At the very top of the draft this year, they changed the odds up a little bit to make it such that the two worst teams in the league have the exact same probabilities of landing 1, 2, 3, or 4. The Detroit Pistons and the Washington Wizards were those lucky losers. Detroit and Washington find themselves with equal 52% chances to land somewhere in the top 4 and 48% chances to land outside of the top 4. Now, in Detroit's case, they had the worst record in the league. They can't fall further than 5. Washington could theoretically fall down to 6 if both them and Detroit were left out of the draft lottery. However, since the NBA moved to this new model of the top 3 teams all having an equal 14% chance of landing the number 1 pick, which I believe was 5 years ago now, this will be the 6th lottery in which they have completely evened out the draft lottery odds. And apart from the first year, so the first year that they did the lottery, which was the Zion year, that year Zion and Memphis for Ja Morant jumped all the way up into the top two. The Knicks, who had the 14% chance, they fell down to number 3. And then the Lakers ended up jumping up to number 4 that year. So after that year where number 1 and number 2 ended up being... After the year that number 1 and number 2 ended up going to teams that were, I believe, 7th and 8th best odds, the last 4 lotteries that they've done, number 1 and number 2 best odds have all ended up in the lottery in some order. Like, 1 and 2 have been the teams most with the highest probabilities. At least one of those teams has ended up in the top 2 outside of the first year that they did it. So in 80% of the time, one of those two teams ends up in the lottery. More often than not, they both end up in the lottery, but sometimes you just are shit out of luck. Like, for example, the 2021 Oklahoma City Thunder or the 2019 Cleveland Cavaliers. You know, sometimes you're just shit out of luck. Or in 2021, for example, when the Rockets, who had the highest probability of getting the number 1 pick, ended up falling to number 2, and they ended up getting Jalen Green, which doesn't seem to have worked out quite as well as they originally intended. So the odds are very high that either Detroit or Washington will end up somewhere in the top three. As I mentioned, four out of the last five lotteries, one of the teams with the two highest odds, since they changed the order, or since they changed the format of the draft lottery, four out of the 5 years, a team with the two best odds in the lottery has ended up in the number one or two spot. And in all five draft lotteries, a team with the one and two best odds, or in the case of one, two, three best odds, because it used to be one, two, and three, all had the same 14% chance of getting the top pick. Teams with the two or three highest probabilities have ended up in the top two in every single draft lottery since they changed the format 5 years ago. I bring that up to say this. Detroit and Washington, according to this year's lottery odds, have an 79.2% chance of ending up somewhere in the top three. So odds are very high that Detroit and or Washington will end up somewhere in the top three. As I mentioned, based on the true numbers, they have a 79.2% chance that one of the two ends up in the top three. Based on historical precedent, a team with the highest odds going into the draft lottery, which is either 1 and 2, 1, 2, and 3, or just number 1 overall, since they changed the format in 2019, in each of the five lotteries, the team with the highest odds in the lottery has ended up in the top 3 in each of the last five drafts, in some way, shape, or form. You know, there's even odds, so that's why we're lumping Detroit and Washington together. Previously, the top three picks all had even odds at 1, 2, 3, and 4. So a team with the highest probability has ended up in the top three in every single lottery they've done since they changed the format 5 years ago. Based on the pure numbers, 79.2% chance. Detroit or Washington very likely to end up in the top three. Then we get to picks 3 and 4, which are close to even odds, but not exactly even odds. Charlotte and Portland. Both teams who are now perennial lottery teams, consistent lottery teams, Charlotte and Portland. Both have approximately the same probability of ending up in the top four. Because for those who are unfamiliar, the draft lottery is done that they pick the numbers for ping pong balls, 1 through 10, and then they assign numbers randomly to each team, and the numbers that get pulled are the pick that is associated. I think they have like 10,000 possible combinations to choose from. Charlotte and Portland have approximately the same chances of ending up in the top of the draft lottery. For the Charlotte Hornets, 50.3% chance that they end up in the top four. For Portland, 50.1% chance. Which means it is essentially a 50-50 proposition between one of these teams ending up in the lottery. Again, how far Charlotte or Portland fall if they don't get into the lottery, that's determined by who makes the dramatic jump below them. But based on the numbers, one of these two teams will end up in the top four. One of these two teams will not. That is the most likely outcome. There is a 25% chance, approximately, that both of them end up in the top four in some order. And there is approximately a 25% chance that neither of them ends up getting picked in the top four, at which point one of the teams down below will have made a dramatic jump into the top of the draft lottery. And Charlotte and Portland are both in these interesting places where they are both deep into rebuilds now. But I think Charlotte expects to be a little bit better because they feel they have the franchise cornerstones. Like, LaMelo Ball signed a max extension with Charlotte at this point. Brandon Miller finished second place for Rookie of the Year. Charlotte feels like they have some level of foundational piece in place, and they're still waiting to hire a head coach. But ultimately, they feel like they have lost long enough to put the foundational pieces in place Portland is in this place where I look up at them and I'm like, I know that you went through the losing to try and get young players around Damian Lillard. But after they ended up going ahead and trading Damian Lillard and not getting significant value back, it feels like they're right at the beginning of this rebuild and that they actually do kind of need to hit on a superstar cornerstone player. And look, maybe Scoot Henderson is going to be that guy. He had a terrible rookie season. They're much early on in his development, especially for a young guard, much early on in his development. But you look at Portland, they're like, that team's going to suck next year and maybe suck the year after that too. So like Portland kind of needs a couple of these picks to hit. And look, if they're playing the lottery ping pong ball game, they're no strangers to how this is going to work, especially because Portland also has an increased ever so slightly chance of ending up at the top of the draft because Portland gets the Golden State Warriors pick this year unless the pick ends up getting in the top four. So, like, Portland gets the pick a 96.6% sure they're going to get the 14 pick in the draft. No team has ever made the jump from 14 into the lottery. They even out the odds dramatically so that it is highly, highly, highly unlikely that a team like Golden State or Sacramento or Houston at the bottom of the draft lottery makes a dramatic jump into the top 10. It's also dramatically hard for Atlanta or Chicago to make that jump, but it's more probable at the very least. They try to make it so that the play-in teams don't have really much of a chance of getting into the lottery, and that's probably a good way to even it out. Which, by the way, it did happen one time, though, that the team with the lowest odds jumped into the top of the NBA draft, and that was when, with a 1.5% chance at the top pick, the Orlando Magic jumped up to number one in the NBA draft. A 1 in 66 chance that Orlando would make that jump to the top of the NBA draft lottery. And you know what? We are now 31 years removed from that, which means it should be another 35 years before such a case happens again. So for Portland, lucky them. Hopefully they get a top pick in the lottery because they are essentially guaranteed two lottery picks in this year's draft. It's a 96.6% guarantee that they get the 14 pick in the draft, and they have a 50.1% chance of making the jump. And for Portland, I feel like both of those players are going to go a long way to figuring out just what this thing is going to look like. Because I look at Charlotte's roster, and even if it might be flawed logic, they feel like they have foundational pieces for what they are trying to build in LaMelo Ball and Brandon Miller. With Portland, I think everything is on the table, the same way that everything is on the table with Washington right now as well. They feel like they don't really have much of a foundational piece, but you know what they do have? A 50.1% chance of landing in the top four of the NBA draft lottery. And isn't it fun to go into the lottery with a coin toss? A coin toss. You could flip a coin to decide whether you get a top four pick or whether you end up 5, 6, 7, or in a weird long shot case, 8. So for Portland, they will be watching with much intrigue, just as Charlotte will be watching with much intrigue. However, Charlotte fans are kind of numb to the whole lottery thing at this point. I believe they have the longest playoff drought of any team in the NBA. So Charlotte's pretty numb to it at this point. Charlotte needs to go out there and call the New York Knicks and see if they can trade for Julius Randle. See if Julius Randle, LaMelo Ball, and Brandon Miller can put something together. Now we get to the fun portion of the NBA draft lottery. And that's number 5 and number 6. And I say number 5 and number 6 are the most fun because it's San Antonio and Toronto. San Antonio might end up with both of these picks. Because if you remember last season, the Toronto Raptors acquired Jakob Poeltl at the trade deadline from the San Antonio Spurs. And I know you might be thinking, wait, wasn't Jakob Poeltl already on the Toronto Raptors? You are correct. Jakob Poeltl was traded from Toronto, the team who drafted him in the lottery in 2016 with a draft pick they got from Andrea Bargnani in a similarly dumb trade where the Raptors, in exchange for Andrea Bargnani, a pretty good center who the New York Knicks probably overpaid for. In exchange for Andrea Bargnani, the Raptors got a bonus lottery pick from the New York Knicks in 2016 that finished number 9 overall and ended up being used to select Jakob Poeltl, a foundational player who they traded 2 years later to acquire Kawhi Leonard and ultimately win a championship. 4 years after trading Jakob Poeltl from Toronto to San Antonio, actually, it was 5 years later because it was 2023. 4.5 years later, we'll call it. 4.5 years later, Toronto reacquires Jakob Poeltl from the San Antonio Spurs for a first-round pick protected in the top six. Guess where Toronto ended up in the standings this season? That's right, sixth place for the worst record in the NBA. Toronto traded OG Anunoby, traded Pascal Siakam. RJ Barrett missed a significant portion of the back half of the season after a really, really tragic situation with his brother dying after contracting some sort of illness in the weeks leading up to his death. His brother was only 19 years old, I believe. Toronto ended up bottoming out. Terrible second half of the season. First season with Darko Rajakovic, the only thing I remember was him yelling at someone because Scotty Barnes will be all-star in this league, and it was ridiculous that something happened to Scotty Barnes, but I can't remember what it was now. Toronto bottomed out to try and protect that draft pick. Not the only reason why they bottomed out, but it was a factor at play as to why the Toronto Raptors had such a terrible second half of the season and completely fell off the face of the earth as they engage in a rebuild mode that they probably should have started a couple years ago. But I understand why they wanted to try and win with Van Vliet and Pascal Siakam and OG Anunoby and just see what they could kind of put together. Now they have foundational pieces of Emmanuel Quickley and RJ Barrett and Scotty Barnes, who, again, Darko says will be all-star. So they believe, and by the way, he was an all-star. So they believe Scotty is going to be the best player on a team that ultimately takes them back to the playoffs. Now, time will tell if Scotty Barnes ends up being the best player on a team that competes for championships, but we're a ways away from that in the development of Scotty Barnes. I mean, Scotty Barnes is this was his third year in the league, and he's about to be a fourth-year player who's a 22-year-old all-star. Hopefully if things go right for him, he will be a perennial all-star there in Toronto, and you do what the draft lottery song says and get a star player for 7 years before they inevitably have to trade him somewhere else. However, this is a very interesting situation because San Antonio holds the number 5 pick. Toronto holds the number 6 pick as things stand right now. San Antonio will keep their pick no matter what, and San Antonio has a 42.1% chance of ending up in the top four, which, you know, if San Antonio ends up in the top four, great. You know, they already have their Wemby. They're trying to maybe package the pick to see if they can get a superstar player somewhere in the trade market. Maybe a Trae Young, maybe Devin Booker finally wants out. Maybe they go sign Chris Paul, who knows. But Toronto only keeps their pick if it ends up in the top six. And Toronto has only a 45.8% chance of keeping that pick. 45.8. 54.2% chance that pick goes to San Antonio. 50% chance, roughly 50.3. Toronto is giving either the number 7 or number 8 pick to San Antonio. Because here's the deal. The odds Toronto stays at number 6 are incredibly low. Because in order for Toronto to remain at number 6, the draft lottery would have to pull Detroit, Washington, Charlotte, Portland, San Antonio. Four of those five in some order. Otherwise, the reason Toronto's not going into the lottery, or going into the top four, is because one of the teams below them made a jump into the top four. And if one of those teams makes a jump into the top four and Toronto doesn't get their number pulled by any of the four picks, well, Toronto just slid from the 6th pick in the draft down to the 7th pick in the draft. And what happens if they fall to the 7th pick in the draft? San Antonio gets their first round pick. Now, what are the chances that one team, 7 through 14, makes a jump into the top four? Just at any point in the lottery, any number, any spot, any point. What are the odds that one of those teams makes the jump into the lottery? Well, if it's exactly one team, that's a 29.8% chance. If it's two of those teams make a jump into the top four, that's a 20.5% chance. If three of those teams were to make a jump into the top four, that's a 3.7% chance. And the odds that four teams ranked 7 through 14 make a jump into the top four, well, that's only a 0.1% chance. That would be a highly unlikely scenario. Highly unlikely. In fact, like a 1 in over 1,000 chance of that possibly happening. However, all San Antonio needs to get that pick is Toronto doesn't get picked as one of the four teams, and just any one of the other eight below Toronto makes the jump into the top four. That has a 54.2% chance, or sorry, 54.8% chance of coming true. 54.2 that happens. 45.8 that it goes to Toronto. And the way it goes to Toronto is easiest way. Toronto ends up getting their number called. Or the 8.6% chance that Toronto doesn't get called, but all teams above them end up getting picked. To Detroit, Washington, Charlotte, Portland all end up getting picked. It's a really interesting game that's being played here, because if Toronto loses that pick and it goes to San Antonio at either 7 or 8, maybe a long shot of 9 or 10, but most likely at 7 or 8, San Antonio is now working most likely, because under this scenario, you know, one of the teams below them makes the jump. San Antonio is most likely working with two top seven picks. One of them might end up being at the top of the lottery, but the bare minimum is San Antonio gets two top seven picks. And if San Antonio gets two guaranteed top seven picks plus the treasure trove of draft picks they have down below, hey man, if a superstar wants to go play with Wemby, San Antonio can make that happen. Not only does someone want to go play for San Antonio, but San Antonio has the capital available to make the best offer. Because, like, if Lauri Markkanen was made available for trade tomorrow, San Antonio wouldn't be the team most interested in him. But also, like, if, I'll use a local example, if the Sacramento Kings wanted to go get Lauri Markkanen, they can't have Lauri Markkanen because they don't have the best offer on the table. Or if a team like, if Brandon Ingram comes available, if the Cleveland Cavaliers say we want to go get Brandon Ingram, they can't get Brandon Ingram because they don't have the best trade package on the table for Brandon Ingram. San Antonio would be in this unique space where people actually want to go play for them and they would have the best trade package on the table. So then the question would just be figuring out the player who wants to come play. Is it Devin Booker? Is it Trae Young? Is it Donovan Mitchell? Who's the player who wants to go play with San Antonio that San Antonio has the best trade package available to go get a bona fide star? That is an interesting situation that San Antonio and Toronto are navigating as they go into the draft lottery. Again, 54.2% chance Toronto loses their first round pick to San Antonio. 45.8% chance it ends up going to the Spurs. Or sorry, that it stays with Toronto and that Toronto gets to draft another foundational franchise piece to pair alongside Emmanuel Quickley, RJ Barrett, and of course, most importantly, Jakob Poeltl. And the last thing I'll say on this is just speaking of Jakob Poeltl, how ironic is it for NBA draft lottery nerds like myself? How ironic is it that 8 years ago, Toronto acquired Jakob Poeltl via the lottery because New York didn't put the proper protections on a trade for Andrea Bargnani. 8 years later, San Antonio is about to get a pick from Toronto because they didn't put proper protections on the same player they drafted with that pick 8 years prior. The cycle came all the way back around from one misguided trade to another misguided trade. Toronto has come full circle in NBA draft lottery lore. It's the most wonderful day of the year. There'll be ping pong balls falling, the lottery's calling to fill us with cheer. It's the most wonderful day of the year. It's the happiest day of them all. Spurs and Pistons and Blazers, Jazz Wizards and Pacers hope to hear names called. It's the happiest day of the year. Teams have lied about tanking except Houston's drunk ravings. Fertitta says pray for Wemby. Mavericks tanking with Luka, they're smoking that hookah. They need a pick in the top 10. It's the most wonderful day of the year. If the numbers are matching, your team will be drafting a star for 7 years. On the most wonderful day of the year.
Go Rockets.
Hey, absolutely.
Thanks so much.
Pray for Victor.
All right, so briefly, 7 and 8, Memphis, Utah. Two very different scenarios, two very boring lottery situations. Memphis has a 31.9% chance of making that leap in the lottery. Utah has a 26.2% chance of making that jump in the lottery. So, you know, one of those teams might end up making that big leap into the top four. And if they got a top four pick, I think both would use it for very different reasons. Because in the case of Utah, they don't have their foundational player yet. Like, I'm not living in a world where Lauri Markkanen can be the best player on a team that is good enough to even compete for the playoffs. I think the last 2 years have shown that. Like, Lauri Markkanen is the best player on Utah right now, but that doesn't mean he is a best player quality guy. I mean, he was damaged goods when he got out to Utah. And granted, he has built himself into an all-star caliber player. He played in the all-star game in 2023. It's just Lauri Markkanen on a team that... Lauri Markkanen is one of those players that if he's your number one, you're not a playoff team. If he's your number two, you're a play-in team. If he's your number three, you're a competitive basketball team. And if he's your number four, you have a chance to win a championship. That's just the easiest way I can explain that, is like, Markkanen is an incredible player. If Oklahoma City does what everyone thinks they should do and go out and trade for Markkanen and put him with SGA, Chet Holmgren, and Jalen Williams, that team would be great. Great. Great enough to win a championship with Markkanen as their number four. But with Markkanen as your number three, you are probably a playoff caliber, very good team. With Markkanen as your number two, you're a play-in team, and as Utah's shown, Markkanen as your number one, you are looking at that 26.9% chance, or I'm sorry, the 29.2%, no, that can't be right, the 26.2% chance you have of getting the number one, getting a top four pick somewhere in the draft. Also, if Utah falls outside of the top 10, their draft pick goes to Oklahoma City. Chances of that happening, 0.5% chance. There's a 1 in 230 chance that Utah falls out of the top 10 and their pick goes to Oklahoma City. Very, 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 very unlikely to happen. Even more of a long shot. That would be a much longer odds than Golden State getting the number one pick. In fact, it's about 10 times more likely that Golden State ends up getting a top four. Oh, here, let me make this part clear. It is more likely that Golden State jumps from 14 to the number one pick, which is 1 in 140 chance. There's a better chance Golden State jumps from 14 to 1 than it is that Utah will lose their draft pick to Oklahoma City. So that's just a weird, an interesting note, but very, 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 very unlikely that Utah is going to lose their draft pick to Oklahoma City. All right, now we get to the most fun scenario here. Just briefly off the bat, just going to say play-in teams, Atlanta, Chicago, Sacramento, Golden State. Very long odds to get into the top 10. The odds that any one of them, like just one of the play-in teams between Atlanta, Chicago, Sacramento, and Golden State ends up jumping into the top four is approximately, let's see, that's just doing quick math here. So 1.5, 2, 3, that's 6.5. It's a 29% chance, roughly 29% chance that either Atlanta, Chicago, Sacramento, or Golden State makes the jump into the top four. So basically what I'm saying is the odds of Memphis at 7 jumping into the top four is slightly better than any of Atlanta, Chicago, Sacramento, or Golden State jumping into the top four. And Golden State, by the way, doesn't even keep their pick unless they jump into the top four, which, as we mentioned earlier, 96.6% chance Portland is going to get that number 14 pick in the draft. How did Portland get that number 14 pick in the draft from the Golden State Warriors? I'm glad you asked. It's a very long and winding road of trades that begins with the Golden State Warriors dumping Andre Iguodala onto the Memphis Grizzlies, and follows a winding transaction of trades that ultimately concludes with Jrue Holiday getting traded to the Boston Celtics. 5 years later, let's see, the Iguodala trade was summer of 2019, so a pick that originally got traded summer of 2019 from Golden State to Memphis to dump Andre Iguodala's contract, that pick 4.5 years later ends up in the hands of the Boston Celtics, and the Boston Celtics trade that pick to Portland in order to get Jrue Holiday. That's how it ends up happening. Now for the most fun and interesting scenario behind the San Antonio-Toronto story to wrap up our extensive draft lottery coverage, because again, nobody gives more comprehensive draft lottery coverage than us. The last two teams are number 9, Brooklyn, and number 12, Houston. Now, you may remember many years ago how the Brooklyn Nets and Houston Rockets engaged in a certain trade for a certain MVP and future Hall of Famer, James Harden. Houston and Brooklyn both don't get to keep their picks, except for a very slim 7.2% chance that the Houston Rockets end up jumping into the top four. 7.2% chance Houston gets their number called in the lottery. But outside of that 7.2% chance, neither Brooklyn nor Houston get to keep their draft picks. Brooklyn's pick goes to Houston no matter what. It is completely unprotected. Brooklyn gets no shot in the lottery. Their picks go into Houston. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. Houston's pick is going to Oklahoma City with 92.9% certainty. Because the only way that Houston keeps their pick is if Houston ends up winning in the draft lottery and getting the top pick. Now, what I think is most interesting about this story is from the Houston standpoint, because the Brooklyn standpoint is as simple as this. They made an all-in trade for James Harden to pair him with Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and it did not work. Okay, it just didn't work. It blew up in their face. This pick is one of the repercussions of things going poorly. Brooklyn understands all-in trades that go poorly. See Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum in this year's NBA playoffs, both of whom were picked by Boston with picks that belong to Brooklyn. But we've well hashed out the Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, James Harden era. You know, it's not really that interesting anymore, especially now that Durant is on his new team. Kyrie's on his... Durant's about to be on his second new team, potentially. Kyrie is kicking ass and taking names in Dallas, and James Harden is now two teams removed from his Brooklyn days. The trade just didn't work out, and that's just the circumstances of which that they will live with the repercussions of. They just don't get a first-round pick this year, and they will continue to toil in that space of trying to make the play-in round. And I really like Jordy Fernandez as their new head coach. He was a Sacramento Kings assistant. He's now going to Brooklyn. That's going to work out wonderful. Thumbs up. The Houston side of this, I think, is incredibly interesting because Houston, over the last 6 years, has been one of the most interesting and complex franchises that is ultimately run by a shallow man. Like, the ins and outs of the basketball is so complex because ultimately their owner is such a ding-dong and a goofball. And I'm just going to say it, a fucking idiot. That they have ultimately fallen into a really interesting situation, and it is this. After the Houston Rockets lost Game 7 of the 2018 Western Conference Finals against the Golden State Warriors, they lost their best chance of winning a championship right there. That is to date the best team that I have ever seen not win an NBA championship, and that includes the 73-9 Golden State Warriors. That Rockets team was the best team that never won a championship that I have seen in my lifetime. That Houston Rocket team, the following year, got bounced in the second round by the Golden State Warriors in the second round. I think it was 6 games. And by the way, that was a series that didn't have Kevin Durant, because that was when Durant had injured his Achilles. And he didn't play until he came back in the finals and tore his Achilles after playing 12 minutes for the Warriors. After the Rockets lost that series without Kevin Durant, Warriors, the Rockets decided we have one last chance to keep this championship window open. And what they did was they flipped a ton of future draft picks and to upgrade from Chris Paul to Russell Westbrook. Something everyone agreed at the time was an overpay, but if Russell Westbrook and James Harden could get back to the conference finals, especially now with a Warriors team that was completely out of the picture, people felt like they had a puncher's chance of winning that conference. And what ultimately happened was Houston lost in the second round in the bubble year, and Russell Westbrook got sick of James Harden's crap and ended up getting sent to Washington in the flip of Westbrook for John Wall. And that was the end of the Rockets. Like, that bubble year was the unofficial, official end of the Rockets. And the reason it was the unofficial end of the Rockets was Harden knew that they were not good enough to win a championship and was willing to blow the whole thing up to go to Brooklyn. And I commend James Harden for this point. Like, it's really hard to be legacy franchise player still only 2 years removed from being the best team in the NBA. And to say, yes, I am ready to go. Like, the modern equivalent of that would be Giannis in the middle of this last season saying, I'm ready to go. After they won the championship, what, 2 years ago? And granted, Milwaukee tried the same thing. They gave up a ton of... They gave up all the future capital that they still had to upgrade from Drew Holiday to Damian Lillard. An upgrade that will ultimately prove, I think, validating if healthy. If is a big if on the health thing. But will ultimately prove validating later. But in the regular season this year, like, was hard to discern whether or not Damian Lillard was still a better player than Drew Holiday. And Milwaukee tried the same move. Other teams have tried the all-in move at the end of the window. But as soon as that window ended for Houston, they looked up and they were like, oh crap, we just gave away all these future draft picks to Oklahoma City for a one-year run with Russell Westbrook that did not result in a championship. And they got less for Westbrook on the back end than what he was worth in the first place. They did get a draft pick back from Washington in exchange for the Westbrook for John Wall swap, so it made the hurt a little bit less. And I think that pick turned into Şengün. Like, if I remember, it was either Tari Eason or Şengün was the player they picked with that pick they got from Washington. So it didn't end up being, like, the worst trade in the world either when they dumped Westbrook on the back end. Like, John Wall didn't turn into anything, but they didn't get nothing for Westbrook on the way out the door. They did ultimately end up getting, it was either Tari Eason or Şengün. But once James Harden was out of there, they were out of there. You know what happened when they went all in and it didn't work on the 1 year with Westbrook? They got everyone up out of there. Harden out of there. Westbrook out of there. Daryl Morey quit. Got everyone up out of there. Despite the fact that they didn't have their draft picks. And the reason they did it despite the fact they didn't have their draft picks was we still got the lottery protections on those picks. And to their everlasting credit, they tanked correctly. Every single pick they have maintained. They did, in fact, tank correctly. They got Jalen Williams with the number 2 pick. They got Jabari Smith Jr. with the number 3 pick. And last year they got the Thompson twin with the 4th pick. Like, they did not miss. All hits, no misses for the Houston Rockets. I feel like I'm forgetting someone, too, in there. Who else did they pick? They got... No, because this is 24. That's right. Yeah, they to their everlasting credit, they hit on every lottery pick. They had top 4 protections on all of them. Some of them were pick swaps with top 4 protections, and they hit on every single one. Because they needed to make sure we put the top 4 protections in on those picks to Oklahoma City, and we need to make sure we hit on as many of them as possible. When people thought Oklahoma City was going to come through and, like, wreck shop because they had all these draft picks from Houston and all these draft picks from the Clippers, and they just had, like, a million first-round picks and, like, half the league's second-round picks and everything like that, it ultimately doesn't look as bad in hindsight because they hit on all these lottery protections. Houston hit every single year to avoid having to send those picks to Oklahoma City. And ultimately, the bill will one day come due, beginning with this year. Like, the Rockets don't have access to their draft pick this year, unless, again, they get lucky and hit on the lottery. But they made sure, if we're going to tank, we're going to tank absolutely correctly. And you know what else we're going to do at the end of it all? What we're also going to do is that we are going to make up for our losses by getting every single draft pick we can possibly get from the Brooklyn Nets. And so now Houston, at the end of it all, they went from We are all in to try and win a championship with Russell Westbrook. Ah, shit, didn't work. We're going to tank to protect our draft picks from Oklahoma City. We're going to make up the capital that we've lost in a trade with the Nets. And this year's the collision of those two moves. The all-in move to try and win a championship with James Harden that didn't work out the way they wanted to. And then they went into damage control by sacrificing multiple seasons of their competitive window and tanking, I would argue correctly, but sacrificing multiple years of their window in exchange for, and then on the back end, get as many draft picks as you can possibly get from the Brooklyn Nets to help begin this rebuild while we bottom out and protect our own picks. And lucky enough for them, they protected every single one of their picks in the rebuild. They got Jalen Green with the 2 pick. They got Jabari Smith with the 3 pick. They got Amen Thompson with the 4 pick. They never, ever struck out of the lottery, despite the fact that in a number of those years, they had less than a 50% chance of getting that top 4 pick. 2 years ago, when they got Jabari Smith, Houston had the 52-48 chance that the Pistons had because they had the worst record in the league. They had that 52% chance of staying in the top four, 48% chance of falling out of the top four, and to their everlasting credit, they hit on number 3. Granted, they got the crappiest of the picks that year because everyone around them got a better player. I believe one was Paolo Banchero, all-star. 2 was Chet Holmgren, rookie of the year. 4 was Keegan Murray, better player than Jabari Smith. 5 was Jaden Ivey, better player than Jabari Smith. However, they did at least get to keep the pick. Like, it's not whether or not they pissed away the draft pick after the fact. It's just at least they got to keep the pick to their everlasting credit. Like, it didn't end up giving Jaden Ivey to Oklahoma City, which only would have enhanced Oklahoma City's winning window. And to Oklahoma City's credit, they didn't need Houston's picks. They didn't need Houston's picks at the top of the lottery to break their way in order to build a winning team. Now, is that because they happened to develop Shai Gilgeous-Alexander into an MVP frontrunner? Yes. And almost exclusively, yes to that. Because Jalen Williams was acquired by another trade. Maybe that was a Clipper pick. Jalen Williams was a Clipper pick. Chet was their own pick. Giddey was their own pick. They didn't need Houston's pick to break their way in order to build a championship caliber team. To Oklahoma City's everlasting credit, it didn't hurt them much. But if they had walked away with a Jaden Ivey, or if they had walked away with someone from last year's draft class, maybe a Thompson twin themselves, like, they would have been even better than they are right now and even deeper than they are right now. But to each their own, Oklahoma City seemed to be just fine without it. But from the Houston standpoint, what they end up with now at the end result is this interesting crossroad of this year's draft where the most likely outcome is that they end up jumping at the end of it all 3 spots in the lottery. They go from 12 to 9, or they go from 12 to 10 at the end result of all of it. As they try and become competitive again, they essentially pick swap between Brooklyn and themselves, between Brooklyn and themselves, and ultimately themselves and Brooklyn 4 years later are on the exact same timeline that they were when they made the trade. Houston was going to the bottom. Brooklyn was going to the top. That's why you make a James Harden trade. Houston was bottoming out. Brooklyn was trying to compete right then and there. And 3.5 years and four seasons later, both teams are in the exact same place of 11th place in their conference, trying to compete, not having the horses to do so. And isn't that so funny at the end of it all? Isn't it so ironic that Houston, after the all-in move of trying to win around James Harden and the all-in teardown of let's see what we can get for James Harden at the back end from Brooklyn, put them in the exact same place? Both teams finished 11th in their conference. Ultimately, Houston's going to finish with a 2-pick higher in the lottery outcome as a result of that deal. And ultimately, I think that's kind of the best way to phrase it, right? After Houston spent 3 years in the lottery, and at the very, very top of the lottery. And after Brooklyn spent 3 years being the center of attention for all the wrong reasons, after Brooklyn was the center of the NBA universe for all the wrong reasons, and after Houston was completely and utterly irrelevant for 4 seasons, completely, utterly irrelevant, at the end of it all, they both end up in the exact same place, making it such that Houston doesn't care that they lost their first round pick to Oklahoma City this year, because they get Brooklyn's first round pick, which is going to be in the exact same position that they were previously. And I think that's an incredibly ironic outcome, that at the end of it all, one dramatic all-in push to win a championship with James Harden, maybe short-sighted all-in push, but an all-in push nonetheless, and one giant messy teardown 4 years later finds Houston breaking even. At the end of it all, they broke even. Now, at the end result, they have Alperen Şengün, who has the best chance of any of these players to be a future All-Star, Jalen Green, who seems to be not for long for that team, Jabari Smith Jr., who seems to be not for long for that team, Fred VanVleet, Dylan Brooks, and a whole bunch of other people who I'm sure they'll sort out the mismatch of play, the group of 10 players that they're kind of deciding who's going to be around for a while and who's not, despite the fact that they don't have any tried and true all-stars on the team. Although VanVleet and Şengün, you know, it's good enough to finish 11th or 12th in the West. Maybe they get to the play-in next year. But what's so interesting is that they ended up in the same place as Brooklyn at the end of it all. Both of them got burned. Not necessarily by James Harden, although both probably have hard feelings for Harden on the way out the door. But both of them ended up in the exact same place. And for Houston, they essentially broke even at the end of it all. The all-in trade for... they haven't paid any of the consequences for the Westbrook trade yet. Now, they still will beginning this year when they send their first-round pick to Oklahoma City. But by virtue of hitting on every lottery pick, they avoided all of the worst repercussions of the Westbrook trade. All their pick swaps got protected. All the picks that they were going to give up to Oklahoma City got protected. Houston avoided significant punishment for the Westbrook trade by virtue of their good luck in the NBA lottery and a commitment to just being truly awful for 3 seasons. Just truly and utterly awful for 3 seasons. Which I would argue is a punishment in and of itself, but in the vacuum of the trade, they didn't have to pay any of the punishments to help funnel draft picks to Oklahoma City, until now. But it doesn't matter that they're funneling picks to OKC until now, because they get all of Brooklyn's picks into perpetuity and pick swaps as well into perpetuity, and now Brooklyn finds themselves in a purgatory of their own making, where they will just be fighting and battling for a play-in spot with no real recourse to improve their roster. Just like Houston will be battling and clawing for a play-in spot with limited ability to retool and rebuild their roster. Ultimately, at the end of it all, both teams ended up in the same place. And the end result is Houston doesn't feel any better or worse about themselves going into this draft lottery. Because, hey, they just get to make most likely a slight jump from number 12 up to number 9. And maybe some good news will break their way. Maybe they hit on the approximately, if my math is correct, maybe they hit on the 31% chance of landing a top pick. The same chances as Memphis. Maybe one of those two picks ends up landing in the lottery, and ultimately Houston gets another top 4 pick with which to build around their Thompson twin, Alperen Şengün, and their mismatch of Jalen Green's, Fred VanVleet's, Dylan Brooks's, and Tari Eason's, and Jabari Smith Jr. It'll be fun to watch. Lord knows I haven't been watching Houston except for these draft lotteries for the last 4 years. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for stopping in here to an hour plus long Take It Easy podcast draft lottery preview show. Again, nobody does better draft lottery coverage anywhere than the Take It Easy podcast. We have you primed and ready for that NBA draft lottery, and we are so excited that it's going to be in a primetime slot on Sunday evening that we can react to Monday, along with some other playoff basketball stuff as well. Leave a 5-star review, download, any and all support is greatly, greatly appreciated. We are coming up on a giant milestone for this podcast, and we could not be more excited to continue. We will talk to you again on Monday. And in the meantime, take it easy. It's the most wonderful day of the year. There'll be ping pong balls falling, the lottery's calling to fill us with cheer. It's the most wonderful day of the year. It's the happiest day of them all. Spurs and Pistons and Blazers, Jazz, Wizards and Pacers hope to hear names called. It's the happiest day of the year. Teams have lied about tanking, except Houston's drunk ravings. Fertitta says pray for Wemby. Mavericks tanking with Luka, they're smoking that hookah. They need a pick in the top 10. It's the most wonderful day of the year. If the numbers are matching, your team will be drafting a star for 7 years. On the most wonderful day of the year.
Go Rockets.
Hey, absolutely.
Thanks so much.
Pray for Victor.